better.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
This is one of those rare episodes of the Paracast where at least two of the people who participate are in the same room together for better or for worse.
Yeah, elbow to elbow.
Not quite. Actually, he's about 4 feet from me, and we're trying to make it 5 feet.
Right.
Because we had kind of a late start with last week's episode on time travel and wormholes, I wanted to go back to the show that Chris and I did with Ed Komarek.
Oh, boy.
Now, a lot of people have listened to that show and said, gee, this guy speaks a mile a minute. Now, some were insulting. Some figured because of his accent they thought they were going back to Mayberry.
Yeah, Ed's a pretty bright guy, though. You don't let the accent fool you. He's pretty bright, but boy, he sure wants to believe. He's definitely dialed in on that.
The one thing that bothered me is when he says, well, I got this stuff on the internet.
I know. Oof. Well, the internet's a wonderful resource tool, and we all use it, and we're becoming more and more reliant on it, but I think you made a really good point, Gene. You need to corroborate these sources. You can't just go on a single internet story or fact or piece of research. You really do have to be careful. You can't take what you get on the internet as gospel unless you can back it up with other source material. So I think that was a point that you made, and it's one that all aspiring researchers out there should remember. The internet can be your friend, but it can also bite you.
And as I said in our editorial for our weekly Paracast newsletter, I pointed out one of the problems with doing your research on the internet is that anybody can publish on the internet. Anybody.
Yeah.
Right.
Even you, Gene.
That's right. Look, there's an example. I got on the internet. Chris O'Brien got on the internet.
Yeah.
There you go.
I was one of the first 1 million websites on the net. Back in 94, I became the first person on the internet in the San Luis Valley and got some help and slapped up a website and found out that I had made it under the 1 million mark. So I was one of the first 1 million websites. You'd never know it looking at my site now. But
it was certainly an early effort to put something together. In fact, your content management system was something 5-6 years old.
Yeah.
And now it's more modernized. But, yeah, you were one of the early people. But the key is today, if you want to get online and have a blog, you can go to Blogger, which is from Google, and get a free blog. You can go to WordPress and set up a free WordPress blog. And everybody uses WordPress. It's not just people who are professionals. It's anybody. Tens of millions of people use WordPress. If that's not enough, you want something a bit more comprehensive, you spend $5 a month for a web hosting plan, and they have one-click installers for WordPress. So anybody can get on there. There's no test. There's no litmus test that says, well, you got to know this, and you got to know that, and you have to have a journalism degree. No, you have to have $5, or you can do it free to get online. So that doesn't prove anything. Of course, it doesn't mean that there aren't really good researchers and writers on the internet. It merely means that the playing field has been leveled. Everybody can get on.
Yeah. Well, when you're researching, one thing that you should look for in a particular subject that you're researching is look for websites that end in EDU. Chances are you're going to be getting credible research from an educational website, one that's affiliated with some sort of educational institution. That's always where I start, is trying my best to get academia involved in my research, and you tend to have a better chance of getting some really good information that way.
Now, a lot of people look at Wikipedia, but Wikipedia is the people's encyclopedia, which means anybody could get credentials to edit. Anybody can get on there and put up an entry about anyone and everybody.
Yeah.
You're laughing.
Why, do you have a Wikipedia entry there?
Not about
me. I've never looked.
It's not one about me.
Yeah. I'm mentioned there, but I don't have, nobody's actually put one up on me, thank God.
You can put up your own. You see, that's it, too.
No.
You can put up your own Wikipedia entry. Yeah.
Homie doesn't go there.
Okay.
I'm already a legend in my own mind. I don't need to be a legend in everybody else's, too.
Right. So you're not going to put up a Wikipedia
No.
entry. There's one for the PowerCast.
Yes, there is. I think I mentioned on that one, too.
That's right. Yeah. That's because I put your name there.
There you go. Well, thank you, Gene.
But as far as this research is concerned, you know, maybe we have to go back to the old-fashioned way, looking things up in books and magazine articles.
Yeah. I'll say.
But someone writes an entire book and says, well, I picked up this material on the Internet. I believe in one case, and I didn't double-check this in the book, but he quoted someone from a message board. And if you think that the Internet and blogs are uncurated, think about message boards.
Especially above top secret.
There you go.
Or Godlike Productions or the Book of Thoth.
What this means, though, if you want to prove anything, if you just want to find something that validates your point of view, you'll find it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And if you want to create validation, you simply post on a message board, and people will agree with you, and people will disagree. So what you do, of course, is to quote the people who agree with you.
Or you could post some research, put somebody else's name on it, and then cite that particular entry to support your conclusion. Yeah, there's a bunch of different ways you can handle it.
Well, that's one way of doing it. That's one way of doing it. But in that case, my conclusion about Ed Komarek is that he is sincere. He has some fascinating ideas. And it's always possible some of his ideas might be right.
Yeah.
One thing he says that I kind of agree with is we should not assume that E.T., if E.T. exists, and we assume there's an E.T., whether or not they're here on this planet is another story, that E.T. is necessarily going to be friendly or friendlier than we are just because they're more advanced scientifically, have a higher level of technology, doesn't mean that their moral behavior is any better.
You know, just don't tell that to Stephen Greer or some of the New Agers out there who believe that the benevolent space brothers are only out in space because they are allowed out in space because they're, you know, they're good guys.
So he's saying basically that if you are allowed to have a space program, therefore, by being allowed to have a space program, that means that you have to be good.
Morally evolved, I think, would be one way to put it. I'm not sure if I particularly agree with that. I would think that look at voyages of discovery and the resulting conquest that happened on our planet. Most times, colonial powers or others set out to discover new lands. They ended up being, they would adversely impact the people that they discovered. So who's to say that's not the case, you know, in the galaxy? I think we might have some marauding space pirate types out there that are looking for resources, looking for things that they value, you know, and we might just be in the way. So you can't assume that the benevolent space brothers are running the program out there.
And if they pretend to be benevolent, well, that might be the worst of all. This week we have a return visit by the famed UFO historian Jerome Clark. But we're not going to talk just 100% about UFOs or even partly about UFOs because he has a new edition of his book out called Unexplained, Strange Sightings, Incredible Occurrences, and Puzzling Physical Phenomena. This is the third edition. And the interesting thing about this book is that it's only partly related to UFOs.
Yeah, very. Not actually, the vast majority of it is about other Freudian-type unexplained phenomena, and this is an invaluable research book, and as I mentioned, Gene, earlier, this is, I think, the only book I have on the paranormal where I have now all three editions. So I have three copies of the same book, and, you know, every few years he's been adding some new entries in there, and this particular version of the book is very, very attractive. It's coming to us from Visible Ink Press. It's really well laid out, and this is invaluable for as a research tool.
And remember, you'll find us online over at Twitter, where we're known as the Paracast on Twitter. Jerome Clark, coming forth this week, you're in
the Paracast.
You know, neighbors, during the summer, it seems like almost everyone is on a different schedule. They have vacations, they have shorter days, and they work remotely. So meeting all your clients and colleagues in person can just be impossible. That's why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It lets you meet face-to-face no matter where you are this summer. Here's how it works. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, it just takes a webcam and a click to collaborate in a group HD video. You can even get an iPad app for it. How about that? Plus, GoToMeeting is so easy to use. You know, our listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. So don't wait for this special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, use the promo code PODCAST. Use the promo code PODCAST at GoToMeeting.com to get a free trial for just 30 days, neighbors. And don't forget that special iPad app.
Good day, Peter Kranchnabel from Midas Resources. Today is August 24th, 2012. Gold opened this morning at 1665.20. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for 1706.66, 853.33 for a half ounce, and 426.67 for a quarter ounce. 1706.66, 853.33, and 426.67.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? Wait a sec. Gold and silver is going up while Congress is trying to settle on the next debt increase. And there's no end to this madness. That old 401k and IRA can be converted into physical gold without tax consequences. I explain this in my book, 10 Reasons to Buy Gold. Don't let time slip away. Call for your free copy today, 800-686-2237. Get away from that Washington spin and get honest answers about gold. 800-686-2237. The book is free, 800-686-2237.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Will I have garlic breath after I take Ali-C?
We get that question all the time about the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. And the answer is, Ali-C contains stabilized allicin, nature's antimicrobial agent, and the active ingredient in crushed garlic, but will not give you garlic breath. Scientifically proven in double-blind studies, using low doses of allicin greatly reduces the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Our powerful Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin. Just one tablet of Ali-C is equivalent to 40 garlic cloves. It's effective against asthma, MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, and helps lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Plus, it's a natural mosquito repellent. Boosts resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 877-888-7126 or garlichealthproducts.com. Fight back with Ali-C.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Back on the Paracast with Gene and Chris, we have Jerome Clark, who has been at this game for more than a few years. He's not as old as the hills I take that credit. And Jim Moseley, by the way, being much older than the hills. But you see, there are some interesting books that came out this week. There's one called The Authentic Book of Ultraterrestrial Contacts, which we're not going to mention because Jerome Clark didn't write it. That's from Tim Beckley. We are going to mention the third edition of Unexplained. Jerry, welcome back to the Paracast. Tell us what's new, different about the book, the third edition.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. And it's always fun when I do this show. The book, it's a significantly changed version of the book. It's up unexplained. There's a lot of new material. I dropped a bunch of material from the previous editions, figuring that I had said all I had to say on those subjects. But the new book has a lot of new material, including a fair amount of material that has never appeared between book covers before. So I think it's going to be a really interesting book, even for people who are well-read in anomalies literature. And, of course, I think it'll be a lot of fun for people who aren't well-read in that. But there's just, I think the book turned out, and I have to say I'm pleased with it.
Well, one of the things, of course, I was mentioning to our listeners before we got you on is the fact that UFOs are just peripheral to this, that we have so many other things going on, like hairy dwarfs and ghost lice and serpents and teleportation and all this other stuff. And thinking of things like teleportation, for example, and we always think of the movie The Fly, we think of beaming me to a new planet, as they do in the Star Trek universe. But in your particular case, teleportation in relation to the unexplained, what do you mean?
Well, this is a term that was invented by Charles Fort, the great writer on anomalies. And it's the instantaneous transport from one place to another. There are a number of, curious anecdotes making those claims. It's not the most evidentially supported anomalous claim, which is why it's in the curiosities rather than mystery section of my book, as I recall, because we just don't have evidence for it. But there are stories that are always interesting and intriguing, and it's a recurring theme throughout, the human tradition of mysterious experiences.
In the case of that, what's your personal opinion about something like teleportation? Do you think that it's possible we'll learn that technology?
I think that we'll probably learn to be able to do just about anything given enough time and enough evolution of technology, assuming that those happen at the same time. Yeah, I think so. I don't know why not, but obviously it's beyond current physics.
So when something like this happens, do you think it's a natural phenomenon? Do you think somebody else is playing around over there or out there somewhere?
Well, I think that probably anything that happens is a natural phenomenon by definition. But the mechanics of it, you get teleportation-like stories in some rare UFO cases, and then you get teleportation-like phenomena in, fairy lore kinds of experiences, religious contexts. It's just something that is alleged to occur just in a broad range of human experiences of the otherworldly, whatever particular guise that otherworldly experience takes at any given cultural moment.
Now, that's an interesting thing you point out here, which is part and parcel of these experiences, that there's a cultural relationship between experiences and how they manifest themselves. Is that assuming, therefore, that our subconscious is influencing us?
Well, there are two things to say about that. One is that there are certain kinds of phenomena that are remarkably consistent over time and space. One of them is the poltergeist. Poltergeist phenomena seem pretty much the same wherever and whenever they occur. There are other things that seem to have a cultural component in at least the way the phenomena are perceived. For example, it's notorious that within the fairy tradition, although certain themes run through all fairy traditions all over the world and in all times and all places, the particular way that people see and experience these otherworldly entities changes. To some extent, this is also true of things like UFOs, creatures. They're both consistent and culture-specific. It's as if people have these experiences, and the experiences are genuinely mysterious and anomalous, but the way they're experienced comes out of any particular culture's particular sense of the supernatural, of a particular society's idea of how an otherworldly experience would play out. It's very strange. We think of things as either objective or subjective, but in so many of these things, which I call experience anomalies, they really seem to be both. They seem to be occurring in some objective state, but being experienced in some kind of subjective perception.
Now, looking at the subjective impression, how does that affect it, in your opinion?
Well, it affects what you see. It affects your interpretation of what's happening to you. You're encountering something that is genuinely really strange and outside current knowledge, outside consensus reality. But how you interpret that experience really depends on the kinds of ideas that a culture gives us about what extraordinary experiences would be like and what you would see and experience in that occurrence. So, for example, if you were living in, say, the west of Ireland in the 19th century, and you encountered mysterious entities that clearly were not part of our consensus reality, you would probably experience them as fairy folk. In another context, you might experience these things as demonic entities or just about any kind of way that you could imagine supernatural beings being. You might experience them as ghosts or monsters or religious entities. It just all depends on what you really expect to experience. That doesn't mean the experience is imaginary. It's just that you experience in a certain way that is based upon your preconceived ideas of how this kind of experience would play out.
Yeah, so basically you're saying it's cultural front-loading. It's what we've kind of grown up and been entrained with by the culture, and we revert to that front-loading when we experience something unusual.
Yes, this isn't 100% of the case. I believe that there are things out there that we do experience that probably do have some kind of objective consensus reality existence, even if it's unrecognized at the moment. But most high strangeness experiences that people have come, as you say, with this cultural front-loading. That doesn't make them any more less mysterious. In fact, if anything, they're even more mysterious. Say that a certain percentage of UFO reports.
Okay, we've got to do the break here, then we'll go into why they're more mysterious.
Okay.
We have Jerome Clark joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio.
Fake Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fake Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fakemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Every day, nearly 3,000 families enter into foreclosure and face losing their home. If you're currently behind on your mortgage, you can still avoid foreclosure. You can save your home, but you need to act now. We're Allied State Foreclosure Services. We're experts in saving homes from foreclosure. With just one phone call to us, you can stop the foreclosure process, lower your monthly mortgage payments, and save your home. Call now. The call is free with no obligation. 1-800-597-8843. Call us if you've been threatened with foreclosure, denied loan modification, or missed a payment on your mortgage. If you've been a victim of a predatory loan or are upside down on your mortgage, even if you've lost your job and you're worried about losing your home, don't wait. Call us now and let us help you save your home. You've worked hard to build a life with your family. Let us help you keep your home. Call now before it's too late. 1-800-597-8843. 1-800-597-8843. 1-800-597-8843.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP, as slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Visit GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
America. Land of the free. But how free can you be, really, when internet viruses and malware can attack your computer? Sure, you have antivirus protection, but it's not free, is it? Until now. Now, Zone Alarm offers free antivirus protection. And independent studies show that Zone Alarm provides better malware protection than even Norton and McAfee. And they're not free, are they? Declare your freedom and go to GetBetterForFree.com. That's GetBetterForFree.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned in to the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
With Gene and Chris, you're in the Paracast, and we're talking with Jerome Clark, author of the third edition of Unexplained, about strange sightings, incredible occurrences, and puzzling physical phenomena. And we were now related to the cultural conditioning, and Jerry, how it front loads our encounters with UFOs?
Yes, or cryptozoological animals. Let's say, for example, that some reports of UFOs or of unknown animals are really of technological craft or genuinely hidden animals that exist in a conventional zoological sense. Some of these things will be found. Some of these things are experienced probably as they are. For example, if some percentage of UFO reports, let's say the hard evidence reports, this close encounters of the second kind, the radar visuals, let's suppose these represent actual perceptions of actual extraterrestrial visitors. But most UFO experiences, particularly the really high, strangest UFO experiences, or in the cryptozoological context, the encounters with bizarre monsters, these are what I call experience anomalies as opposed to anomalous events. And this is where you encounter some unknown, but your mental processing of it takes on a cultural coloration. And I like that term, cultural front-loading. I wish I'd thought that myself, but that's a good way to put it.
Well, one thing that I've often wondered, having investigated hundreds and hundreds of cases and interviewed probably thousands of people by this point, one thing I've noticed is there may be the possibility that the types of events that people are experiencing are not fully fleshed out in terms of details, that the actual experiencer somehow supplies some of the detailing, which is accurate, but only because they're the ones that are experiencing it. I see this kind of personal bias in multiple witness events. Let's say a group of people have an unusual experience. Generally, the facts of the experience will be fairly consistent, but in times of duration and sequence of events, and sometimes descriptions can vary wildly, and I've always wondered about that. Do you think that the experiencer may be partially responsible for for the actual details of what they're experiencing?
Well, yeah, I think there's some truth in that. There's also other considerations. For example, an experience of the extraordinary is just shocking by definition. You know, people aren't prepared for it. Everything has told them that it isn't possible. So when it happens, they're completely unprepared. They're just in a state of shock and, in some cases, denial. Also, many of these experiences are a fairly short duration. So you have two things. You have the shock and you have the shortness of the experience. And these things are really hard to reconstruct and process and turn into some kind of coherent narrative. And so we have all kinds of things going that get between us and perhaps the true nature of the experience. It doesn't mean that people are wrong or they were imagining things. It's just that because of the nature of the experience, people have a real hard time processing it because nothing has prepared them for it. Other more normal human events, we're used to. We know how they work. We more or less expect them, even if they're, you know, surprising or unpleasant. We can talk about them. We have a narrative for them. These things exist kind of outside, you know, conventional narrative, conventional causation. I remember my own experience, which I talk about in the book, of seeing, you know, a phantom quadruped on about three different occasions, and I had a very difficult time dealing with the experience, making sense of it, even acknowledging it, that it was truly extraordinary.
That's interesting. I don't recall, actually, right off the top of my head, that experience. You want to give us a quick thumbnail about that?
Well, this is in the chapter on black dogs. And this was an incident that happened in the summer of 2000. It happened on three occasions. On the first two, I was the only witness. The third incident, my wife, Helene, also saw this thing. But it was a thing that I saw on our front steps during the summer of 2000, and the first two occasions between 10:30 and 11 p.m. And I was aware that there was something on the porch. I was pulling up in my car late in the evening. There was something lying on the front steps. And at first I thought it was our dog, but our dog was never out in the front yard, ever. But I couldn't quite see what it was. But I knew that it was some kind of animal. And so I walked quickly toward it, but as I was walking toward it, it left the steps and headed off in a kind of southwestern direction and then vanished in front of me, maybe about 10 feet from me. And I never got a very good look at it, but it was kind of like the general shape of a large dog, but it made no sound. And it was there, and then it wasn't there. This happened on, as I say, on three occasions. I never got a very good look at it. It was almost more like the idea of something than the thing itself. It was extremely puzzling, and it took me weeks before I could accept that I had had a truly extraordinary experience. And I spent all the rest of that time researching, trying to figure out what kind of conventional animal could have done that. And there were no candidates at the end of that. And, of course, also, obviously, conventional animals don't vanish in front of your eyes. But I couldn't even process that detail. Now, I'm someone who spent his life studying these things. And when even I couldn't deal with what I was seeing, I can understand how naive witnesses must feel.
What sort of time frame did all three occurrences, were they within a fairly close proximity time-wise? Or?
The last of them occurred at 3:45 in the morning. And my wife and I just happened to be up for various circumstances, which are described in the book, that had us up at an unusual hour. The other two occurred between 10:30 and 11 p.m.
So this is all like within the same day, is what you're saying?
Was a course of about a month.
Oh, okay, over a month's time.
These were three different occasions over about a month in the summer of 2000.
Huh, interesting. So you never really got to the bottom of it, huh?
No. It was completely motiveless, purposeless. Didn't make any sense. But it was deeply strange.
When I was little, I saw some what appeared to be miniature kangaroos about 4 inches high, 5 inches high, that were hopping around the yard. And at first, my family thought that these things were kangaroo rats, but there were none anywhere in the area where I lived. And they didn't really look like kangaroo rats because they didn't have that tail. They had a furry tail, which that always puzzled me. I saw these on a number of occasions one summer when I was growing up. I think I was about 8 or 9. And I was able to alert my dad, and he actually saw one, too. And we were both scratching our heads going, what the heck is that?
Was this in daylight?
Yeah, it had tall ears like a kangaroo. It didn't have the small ears that you would equate with a kangaroo rat. So, you know, there are some very strange things out there. And your book is filled with some amazing stories with crypto creatures and merbeans. And there's some real good stuff in here, and I'm looking forward to covering some of it.
Good.
That was a good long answer.
Oh, I thought we were going to a break. I'm sorry.
No, we got a bit more.
Missed the cue. Okay. Yes, I think, for example, one thing that I'm particularly proud of is there's perhaps the most comprehensive treatment of mermaid sightings that anybody has compiled, to my knowledge. I spent years working on that one. I got interested in mermaid sightings because I was looking for something akin to other kinds of anomalous experiences, but I wanted to find something that was so outrageous that nobody could argue that that these things actually existed. But I wanted to see if the experiences of seeing mermaids had the same kind of feeling of the vivid feeling of reality that other kinds of anomalous occurrences have.
We'll get into mermaids, mermen, and lots of other subjects with Jerome Clark. He's author of Unexplained, now in his third edition. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast. America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast Jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Let's keep preparedness simple. Do you need stuff for disasters? Of course you do. For over 15 years, DisasterStuff.com has, well, stuff for disasters. See? Easy to remember. DisasterStuff.com. Want free shipping on a new Berkey water filter? DisasterStuff.com is the official Berkey in-stock shipping center. Lots of folks want an EMP Faraday bag to protect sensitive electronics during a solar or nuclear event. Now for a limited time, all survival gear purchases over $75 include a free 8x8-inch EMP Faraday bag. Just enter promo code EMPBAG when you check out at DisasterStuff.com. We're also a Country Living Grain Mill authorized dealer. Plus, we offer freeze-dried foods by Alpine Air and Wise Foods. We also carry emergency kits, survival seeds, and much more. Preparedness should be simple, and it is. Just remember, DisasterStuff.com. Freedom through self-reliance and personal responsibility.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption, absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro EM1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com. Terraganics.com. Or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro EM1, the raw probiotic.
Do you owe the IRS money that you can't pay? Are tax liens and levies ruining your life? Are you tired of being afraid just to go to the mailbox? If this describes you, then Dan Pilla can help.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been solving tax problems for more than 30 years. In fact, I wrote the book that made it possible to negotiate settlements with the IRS, and I've helped thousands of people do exactly that. Call now at 800-346-6829 to learn how I can help you. You know your IRS debt will not go away by itself, but you don't have to live in fear anymore. New changes to IRS policies will help more people than ever before eliminate their debts once and for all. There's no need for you to suffer another day with IRS debt. Call 800-346-6829. I can help you eliminate wage and bank levies, release tax liens, and negotiate a settlement with the IRS that will put your tax nightmare behind you forever. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, taxhelponline.com. That's taxhelponline.com.
This is Kurt Sutherland, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
We have Jerome Clark. The book is called Unexplained in its third edition. And we ended the previous segment talking about mermaids. And anytime I think of mermaids, I think of a certain film called Splash.
Yeah, Daryl Hannah. Boy, I wouldn't mind walking along a beach and finding her.
Well, in the quote-unquote real encounters with mermaids that have been recorded historically for a long time, one thing you discover if you start reading enough of them is that mermaids and mermen aren't very much like Daryl Hannah. In fact, they don't even speak, and witnesses almost inevitably describe them using the pronoun it, and clearly deem what they are seeing as an animal, despite its fantastically human-like appearance. There is nothing that gives the impression of a human level of intelligence or human personality. These are strike people who allegedly see them as, you know, creatures as opposed to beings. And I was deeply into the study of this before I suddenly realized that this was one consistent theme of the sighting reports. Now, I'm not arguing that mermaids and mermen exist in any biological sense. If they did, there would be no question of their existence because so many of the sightings are in shallow coastal waters where bodies would wash to shore. But nonetheless, the sightings of these fantastic entities have the same kind of vivid sense of reality that encounters with, you know, lake monsters or hairy bipeds or other kinds of creatures and monsters have. In other words, the sensation of seeing a mermaid is something that can happen to you. It's experienceable, in other words. It's not an event because you're never going to get a body because they don't exist that way. But they do exist in extraordinary experience. And that makes them, as I want to emphasize again, no less puzzling. If anything, even more puzzling than, you know, the sightings of, you know, quote-unquote conventional unusual animals.
How can you even say conventional and unconventional? But of all the various legends with which you deal with in the book, which ones don't pass muster? Which ones are obviously not strange or strange events, but fake, imagination, hoaxes?
Well, this is one thing I try to do with the book. I say in the introduction that I'm not going to bore you with arguments about witness misperception, where somebody might have seen something in bad viewing conditions and misinterpreted the stimulus. I'm going to talk about stories where either the witness is telling the truth or he's lying, and there's going to be nothing in between. And the last section of the book, which is called Fables, deals with stories of things that clearly are hoaxes, that there's no ambiguity about them. And some things are demonstrably impossible or demonstrably false because we know with certainty that the witness was lying about what he or she claimed to experience. You know, these include things like the Cottingley Ferry photographs, one of the most notorious hoaxes in the history of photography, and the tradition of stomach snakes, where it was once widely believed that stomachs could live inside your gastrointestinal system without your knowing it, and they would cause you all kinds of health problems and pain and discomfort. But eventually, if the snake eventually didn't kill you because of what it was doing to your health, it would be discharged, ejected from the body through, you know, defecation or vomiting or something else. They'd be operating on you and find the snake curled inside you.
So it wouldn't be like the snake that you insert inside your body in the TV series Stargate SG-1.
I'm not familiar with that show. But,
yeah, the Gaul.
But in my research, I came upon all kinds of 19th century newspaper accounts printed as true, claiming that it happened to various individuals around the country. And there is a centuries-old tradition all over the world of stomach snakes. And these stories are quite vivid and really horrifying, even nauseating, and particularly to those of us who are afraid of snakes anyway. But I collected a bunch of them and relate them in the book about what these stories were like and how this tradition developed and why it couldn't possibly be true on any level. I think that in a few cases, you know, there may have been intentional misunderstanding. For example, I think that some people may have had tapeworms or things like that that are known.
Yeah, I was going to mention that we do know that tapeworms are actually used by women, I think, in the Victoria age as weight loss. It's like dieting aids.
I'd lose a lot of weight if I had one of those around, I'll tell you.
I once saw a dog passing one. That was an unfortunately memorable sight.
Oh, jeez. Poor thing. Well, you know how they used to get them out? Once the woman said, I don't want this tapeworm anymore, they grow quite long, actually. They're
yes,
many feet long.
Yes, this one was quite dramatic.
They take warm milk in a bowl and coax it out by the person breathing the warm milk, and it would draw the tapeworm up.
Yeah, that sounds like some of the stomach steak stories, so maybe that's the inspiration.
Remember, ladies and gentlemen, that we understand you might be having dinner when you hear this show. So let's just keep that under consideration.
Well, the story was that if you drank from a stream out in the country, or you had slept out under the stars and had your mouth open, that was how the snake could sneak through your mouth into your system. And these stories are reported quite matter-of-factly in some of these old newspapers, but they're not true. They just couldn't possibly be true. There's no way that this could happen. It's just physiologically impossible. And that's why I reject the stories, not because they're fantastic stories, but because they're just physiologically impossible.
Well, we had quite a story here about a week or so ago, right here in Mesa, which is, you know, just east of Phoenix. They found in a suburban neighborhood a 15-foot rattlesnake that weighed, what was it, 170 pounds or something? It was huge. I think it may be possibly a record for a rattlesnake.
That's really fantastic. Yeah, that.
Yeah, there was photographs of it.
Wow,
it was huge, huge. Oh boy, I would not. And people are wondering what happened to Fluffy, their little poodle, or maybe their cats or something. That thing could actually probably eat an infant if it wanted to.
How was it found? I hadn't heard this story.
It was found, I think, inside a culvert near a golf course, if I remember correctly. And I guess somebody saw it go in there. They called animal control, and sure enough, they were able to capture it. And there's a couple of photographs that were published of them holding it up by the, you know, a noose around its neck and holding it up as high as they can, and the thing's 15 feet long. That's
wow.
A big rattlesnake.
That is a big one.
Had 2.5-inch fangs.
Wow, I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah, they do get big, but that's pretty rare.
I thought they got about like 7 or 8 feet at the maximum length.
Yeah, I always thought maybe 10, but They estimated this thing was probably over 20 years old. When it rattled, I bet you it had a rattle that could you could probably hear several blocks away.
Yeah. Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah. You don't want to be swallowing that.
Well, there you go. Oh, well, as I said, this is not an episode for those who are having lunch. We have so many subjects to talk about. Let's just go through a few of them here. Now, I want to ask you, though, before we get back to the book, did you get a chance to read this title about Aztec from Scott Ramsey?
Yes.
Okay. Briefly, and I guess you're going to be brief about this, what was your take on it?
I have quite a long essay review, which will be appearing in the Journal of Scientific Exploration, which will be appearing sometime later this year. But I read the book very carefully. In fact, I read it about three times, and I did a lot of research, and I just don't believe any of it. And I think that it's really the most charitable thing that I could think to say about it is that it's unconvincingly argued. And there's a lot more I have to say about it in the review that I wrote.
Well, maybe we could ask you just to spend maybe in our next segment another minute or two going into the areas where you had objections. Now, for your information, we did have Kevin Randall on the Paracast a few weeks ago, and we asked him the same question. And he had a blog entry on the subject, and he indicated where he felt the evidence came up short. And I think very much of it concerns the lack of direct witnesses and the lack of confirmation of so-called direct witnesses that they were even there when the event may have occurred. We have a lot more to talk about with Jerome Clark, with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
In this unpredictable world, disaster can strike anyone. That's why an essential part of any emergency survival plan must be stove in a can. When power goes out and gas lines are down, the portable, safe, easy-to-use stove in a can cooks food up to 4 hours and boils water in as little as 5 minutes. Stove in a can comes with everything you need. The stove, fuel, even waterproof matches, all in a compact, durable, heavy-duty container. Plus, the all-natural, non-explosive, 100% waterproof fuel source can be stored indefinitely. Say goodbye to the hassle and danger of propane, lighter fluid, or gas. Stock up now and protect your family with Stove in a Can, starting out at $29.99. Special bundle offers now available with a 100% satisfaction guarantee or your money back. Order yours today at stoveinacan.com. That's stoveinacan.com.